Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I am steaming mad.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever quite seen you so angry before. And I'm sure, and we'll get to all the Champions League action in mere moments. I'm sure what happened with Liverpool today is feeding into much of that, but it almost seems like this is standalone anger from you, which, I got to be honest, it's nice to see every once in a while. It shows your human side.
My blood pressure must be through the roof. I'm genuinely scared for myself right now, and I don't know how I'll get through this podcast without freaking out.
Yeah, and what a podcast it's going to be, because lots of interesting results in the Champions League today, notably, of course, the Liverpool result at Red Star Belgrade, and Spurs coming from behind against PSV to keep their Champions League hopes on life support, but alive nevertheless. We'll get into a little bit of MLS postseason later in the pod. USA released their squad for their upcoming friendlies over in Europe, and a mailbag. We'll be back, of course, later in the week for a recap of the Champions League matches still to come, and that's when we'll have our red card, man of the match, and all that. But some of what you were mad about, it's a thing we talk about all the time. You know, Alec Baldwin just got arrested because of a parking-related issue where he reportedly punched a guy in the face. And you were just telling me that a lot of your anger is coming from the same place, where people in New York City, we have listeners from all over the country, so a lot of them may not quite understand that, like, people will drive around in this city for, what, hours? Sometimes to try to find a parking spot. And when they see one, all logic and reason goes out the window. That's it. Oh, my God, there's a parking spot. I'm getting it, and I don't care who's in my way.
Who ends up, maybe perhaps an Irishman ends up under the rear tire of your SUV because you need to get into your spot, execute a U-turn, come into the bicycle lane, and nearly kill JJ.
You were nearly killed.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And it happened on Saturday, and I'm bent.
I know it's Tuesday.
I'm bent out of shape over it. But it's also other things. It's stuff we'll discuss in the next podcast, like financial fair play and European Super Leagues. It's Liverpool's performance today.
Yeah.
It's also a guest we were supposed to have in studio tonight.
Things happen.
Things do happen. And let me lift the curtain just a tiny bit. The reason Red Bull fans and honestly the entire nation of Jamaica aren't hearing their beloved Kamar Lawrence tonight is because it was cancelled on us today, quite last minute. Yeah. And I'm not going to body anyone. I'm not going to blame anyone. I'm not going to say anything. But I hate when I let the listeners down, when I promise something and we can't deliver. Mm-hmm. Now, the jokesters out there would say, well, that's every episode. But, you know, this was something that was out of our control, and I apologize. Apologize. And all I'm saying is, you know, you want to promote your league, you want to do the best for your league, you want full houses, you want your players out in front of people. Don't cancel the day of an interview. Don't do it.
There you go. Look, he's steamy, he's sweaty right now. I like this JJ. This is like, we don't see this.
This is David Banner JJ.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
You know what? Let's just keep it going. And I was going to go to some of the other Champions League games first, but no, screw it. We'll keep you at this level. You're at a 10 right now. Let's get you up to a 12 or a 13 when we talk about Red Star Belgrade and Liverpool 2-0. It goes to Red Star with two goals, both before the 30th minute, from the same player, a player who is not typically called upon for goal scoring.
He did a fine job tonight.
And he bags a couple. And Liverpool, well, there's a couple different ways to go with this. Obviously, there's, you know, do you want to talk about the game itself, or do you want to talk about some of the bigger picture things?
Let's just deal with the game first of all. It was another kind of disjointed, incoherent performance where, okay, well, let's start with the early things. I know it wasn't a good performance, but if Daniel Sturridge converts early on,
he has to score. Yeah.
And if he does, that changes. I agree with what Klopp said, because Klopp said we had the first big chance with Daniel, a very big one. Each goal in a game like this leads the game in a specific direction. It's such a trite cliche, but it's a cliche because there's some truth in it. Goals change games. And if we could have got that goal, that is a different performance. It would have ushered, or at least enticed, Red Star Belgrade out even further. And you know what Liverpool do with space in behind. And then they grab the second goal where we're just bodied in the centre of the park, which was a problem all night. And Pavkov unleashes a worldie. And here it is.
Marin to deliver. And it is Red Star who go in front. Pavkov flying in alongside the Genic. They're in dreamland.
And the noise. By the way, credit to the Red Star Belgrade fans tonight. They were absolutely magnificent. I'm sure it harkened back to days of yore. It's the first time in 20 years that they've really won anything at this level of competition. Mm-hmm. So fair play to them. But again, Andrew, Klopp talked about something in the post-match which you could dismiss easily, but it was interesting the language he used. And this is what he said. First of all, as reported by James Pearce of The Echo, Klopp was asked if he can put a finger on what went wrong. I only have 10 fingers. All right, fair enough. But also he talked about the loss of something that's kind of an intangible. It's something that Austin Powers talked about, or was talked about on that film.
Mojo.
Mojo?
Mojo.
Nothing like a timely Austin Powers reference.
Gotta jam it in there. That's the last time I'd heard anyone talk about mojo, was the mid-90s. And Liverpool have lost their mojo. And what is that? They don't have this controlling presence in the middle of the park, and therefore, Andrew, what happens? How do Liverpool create? It's off the cuff. It's very kind of the moment. It's winning tackles and then suddenly breaking at speed. And honestly, in the last few games, particularly Arsenal at the weekend, that has been missing.
Yeah, because it feels like, I don't know, it feels like they're in a bit of a weird place in that their season has still been
good.
The success that I think we thought it would be at this stage. They're still, you know, even with today's result, they're still in good Champions League position. You know, they're second in the group right now.
Now, the PSG draw with Napoli in Naples was huge.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's a lot of good things like happening.
They're still, you know, before the season started, domestically, we thought, okay, well, if anybody's going to be able to contend with Manchester City, it would be Liverpool. Now, Chelsea have also kind of announced themselves to be in that group, but Liverpool have done that. So it's weird. Their season has gone the way that I think we thought it would, but for some reason, I feel like we're at a point right now where Klopp, Liverpool fans, probably players on the team, have probably a little bit of an empty feeling kind of flying back from Belgrade to England tonight.
Now, there was decisions that were made by Jurgen Klopp that I didn't agree with. There's one I wanted to put to you. Well, I'll deal with the first one. I wouldn't have started Daniel Sturridge. I think he has more to offer coming off the bench, although would I be saying that if he'd scored a shot that a player of his calibre should absolutely score?
No, you wouldn't have.
Right. And Firmino maybe needed a bit of a shaking up. Lallana, Milner, Wijnaldum in the midfield didn't quite work. Kate is not 100% ready to go, so that caused a problem. The starting Matip I wasn't enamoured with, but there were reasons with Lovren's sickness why that was probably had to happen. Not bringing Shaqiri.
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, I'm going to ask you, as a neutral, just looking at it, I thought that was unnecessary. What is going to happen to him there?
I don't know. I mean, well, I don't think Liverpool ever cited safety concerns as the reason for not bringing
him. What's the reason then?
Well, Klopp said it was about off-field distractions, right? Now, I don't know if that's just kind of like a soft way of saying we're worried about his safety, but they don't want to overtly say that because that could be deemed offensive to the people of Belgrade, that, you know, they wouldn't be able to control themselves.
Well, Shaqiri said he was ready to go. He wanted to
play.
And I mean, nothing would have been allowed to happen to him in Belgrade. In fact, he would have been the most protected person going into that game for the very reason how it would reflect on UEFA, first of all, how it would reflect on the club, how it would reflect on society in Serbia.
Yeah, I understand why Klopp ultimately chose to go that route, but I feel like it's kind of a sad commentary on the times in which we live that's a decision that he felt was the right decision to be made.
Now, Mkhitaryan had a similar situation with Arsenal about travelling to one of their games where it was a country that wouldn't issue, because he's Armenian, they wouldn't give him a visa. And that caused problems as well. And that is, again, another sad commentary. But I don't think there was a travel issue with Shaqiri.
No, that was never said. It was this was totally Klopp's call. Now, if it truly was about him creating some sort of distraction, like okay, so does that mean now like Manchester City should reconsider bringing Raheem Sterling to games at Anfield? Like, now, I know that obviously it's not quite apples to apples.
I know what you mean.
There's a different political element to Shaqiri, but like, you know, a distraction is a distraction. So, okay, Shaqiri may be asked questions. There may be signs in the stands. Who knows? Somebody may fly a plane overhead. But, like, ultimately, does that have any impact on the game, on Shaqiri himself? If he's strong enough to be able to handle it, if he's mentally tough enough to be able to handle it.
He handled it in a World Cup. Right.
So, yeah, I think you talk to the player. You find out where his head is at. Shaqiri said he was good and he could play and he wanted to go. And I don't know. Again, I understand why Klopp did it, but it kind of bugged me a little bit.
Mkhitaryan couldn't go to Karabag in Azerbaijan because they have the issue with Armenia, if I didn't make that clear.
And look, I don't even know if Shaqiri, what sort of role he would have played, what sort of impact he would have had. If you do believe that he would have come on as a sub or if he would have started under, if this was them playing Napoli rather than them playing Red Star Belgrade, then, you know, that's...
But here's the thing for me. It did materially impact the performance tonight because Red Star Belgrade fell back for most of the second half, Andrew, and the space wasn't there. You needed some kind of creativity. You needed something different, and Liverpool really didn't have it. And that was a massive problem because Firmino, when he came into the game, he couldn't impact it. Shaqiri gives you something different. Look, maybe it would have stayed 2-0. I don't know, but it just seems like a decision that didn't have to be taken.
Yeah. I think I'm with you on that one. So how nerve-wracking is this situation now for Liverpool? Because if you look at the group, like I said, they are still in that second spot. But the two games that were supposed to give them 6 points did not. It yielded them 3 points, the two against Red Star Belgrade.
Yeah.
So now both PSG and Napoli do have a game against Red Star Belgrade remaining. So you've got to believe you can put 3 points. I know it's not safe to do this, but for purposes of this conversation, put 3 points on the board for both PSG and Napoli. Meanwhile, Liverpool still have to play PSG and Napoli. They have to go to Paris in their next match, and then they finish up at home against Napoli.
Which could end up being one of those, what do we call them, Andrew, those big European nights at Anfield.
Well, it really will be, because I know you don't want me to do this, but again, for purposes of this conversation, you know, if I'm making bets on who's winning that game in Paris, I'm probably taking PSG.
Fine.
So now it's danger time for Liverpool in that last game against Napoli.
You're so right. And this is a situation entirely of our own making. And although I will say this, as bad as the performance was tonight, I don't think it was as bad as Napoli away. That was even worse.
Well, here's what Steve Nicol said about Liverpool's performance tonight.
They look tired.
Yeah.
You know, since the Spurs game back in September, they've had a lot of games, pretty much every 4 days, including international week as well. They look jaded. And when your team looks jaded, I think you have to change the system. Klopp did it today in the second half of the game. They went to three at the back, and they dominated the second half. So maybe that's the way for him to go, to try and get some legs back.
I don't have the stats. I don't have the data. It's so hard to quantify tired. It could very much be the case. And they certainly...
I mean, they took 23 shots. They controlled over 70% of the possession.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't like to talk about stuff that you really can't quantify. But like the mojo part of things, Liverpool do play in a style. The worrying thing for me is that Liverpool play in a style last season that was so off the cuff. You had to be energetic, that's for sure, to do it. The press had to work. You had to win tackles in dangerous areas of the field and turn the ball over. And none of that happened tonight.
Yeah, I guess to go back to his point about Liverpool being tired, the thing that I would say about them, looking at their recent fixture list, it's not just that they've played a lot of games in a relatively tight window. They've played a lot of really good teams in a relatively tight window. If we go back about a month and a half to that game at Wembley where they beat Spurs 2-1, you know, between then and now, they've played Tottenham, PSG, Chelsea in the Carabao Cup, and then Chelsea in the league. They've played Napoli. They played Manchester City, Arsenal over the weekend.
Yeah.
And then have to go. So you take all of that And then you think, oh, okay, well, now we get a reprieve against Belgrade. But like, there's something about going to a hostile environment in a place like that, coming off of all of those games when you probably are dealing with some tired legs. It's not as easy. It's why you can't just do what I did and say, oh, well, that'll be 3 points for PSG and 3 points for Napoli.
I'm afraid I did it.
There's more to it. Yeah, everybody did. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Everyone does it. I did it with Spurs and PSV. I said, okay, well, we got Inter and Barcelona, but we got 6 points with Eindhoven. Well, you don't. You don't.
A lot of people were asking whether I'd be able to take it. Because they said, oh, you give it. Can JJ take it as well as he can give it? How am I doing?
Well, you're doing very well. The problem is I don't give it. So, like,
yeah, someone said you're way too...
There's nothing for you to take because right. I'm not going to shove it in your face. Like, that's...
And I only occasionally shove it in your face.
And it's usually through text message, so it doesn't really manifest itself on the podcast. You throw in your little jabs every once in a while, but, you know, whatever. I don't care about you.
Can we talk about Monaco and Bruges? Because we had...
Oh, can we please?
We had a you like us moment. A huge you like us moment.
You like me!
Ethan Horvath. His first UEFA Champions League start for Club Bruges. And he comes out on the side of a 4-0 win away in Monaco. And of course, Paul Carrot these times, these American times, is always important. For the first time since 2012... Three US internationals have played in UEFA Champions League on the same date. Today, Ethan Horvath, Weston McKennie and Christian Pulisic. December 4th, 2012 was the last time this happened.
Wait, do you have the names?
I have.
I kind of want to guess.
I want you to guess.
Fabian Johnson?
Incorrect.
Jermaine Jones?
Correct.
2012.
Yes.
Friedel?
No.
Oh, man. See, I put myself into this mess, and now I look bad. Because there's got to be obvious names here that I'm... Oh.
One of them would soon return and play in this locality for a team I'm not very fond of right now.
One of them would soon return
and play for
the Red Bulls.
Yeah, about a year and a half, two years later. After...
Kljestan.
Yep. Sascha Kljestan for Anderlecht.
Yeah.
And the final one I have no clue about.
You've never even heard of the person.
Oh, I have.
Oh, okay.
But I did not realize that he was Champions Leaguing it up at the time.
Michael Bradley?
No, not Bradley. Even weirder than this. A guy who had a magnificent Confederations Cup in 2009. You loved him in the Confederations Cup.
Jay Demerit?
No.
Oh. Oguchi Onyewu?
Yep.
Was he at AC Milan then?
I'm guessing so.
Or was he at... Standard Liège.
I'm not sure which one it was.
Okay. Huh. All right. That's a fine trivia question. You did fine work there. Yeah, I did love Oguchi Onyewu, one of my all-time favorite Americans.
I did not even know that.
Wow, that's a great trivia question. Yeah, it was a banner day. And even, well, I know you want to talk about Thierry Henry before we move on, because there was, once again, in CONCACAF, in general, it was a banner day. But we'll get to that game once we get to the FC Porto match.
Oh, okay.
But you want to do, you're all excited about Thierry Henry.
Yeah, and I'm upset at you because, again, I'm upset at the world.
That's
on this
fine.
Podcast.
I understand.
Guys, I'm only just calming down right now. I am so angry.
Oh, get a grip, all right? It's not the end of the world.
You didn't create Thierry Henry watch for me.
No, I didn't.
Have we an Henry drop you can hit so we can do
this?
No,
I got absolutely nothing. What are you going to do?
Thierry Henry watch is brought to you by Thierry Henry. These are his last, his first five games for Monaco. 2-1 defeat away to Strasbourg, 1-1 tie at Bruges, 2-2 draw at Dijon. I guess they couldn't cut the mustard that day.
Yeah.
No?
Nice.
Stade Reims at the weekend was a defeat, a 1-0 defeat, and a 4-0 thumping by Club Bruges.
At home.
At home. This isn't going well.
No, you think?
I feel like he's been thrown in at the deep end. And his comments after the Reims defeat at the weekend were interesting to me. Reims practically won all of their jewels and played as they should at home. On our side, the desire was not there. We have the chance to end up at 11 against 10 while we were not in the game, and we punished ourselves with the second yellow for Pelé in the 71st minute. When you enter the pitch and your players involuntarily refuse to play, it is difficult. We have to find our confidence again. I would not have come to Monaco if I did not think that there was quality in this team.
And that's that last part is why I'm kind of conflicted about what's happened there so far. Because, look, on the one hand, you have to look at Monaco, what they are this year and what they were last year or even 2 years ago. You know, they've been gutted. Let's be honest. There's a reason that he's replacing a manager, because it's a very difficult job right now. They had to fire somebody for him to get this job. Like, it's not an easy situation. But on the other hand, it's not like they're completely void of anything resembling talent.
Correct.
Like, to remind people, they still have Radamel Falcao. They still have Yuri Tielemann. They still have Jibril Sidibe. Kamil Glick is still there. You know, even I forgot Nasser Chadli had gone there. You know, so there are still good players to, like, if you were going to tell me that they're going to lose at home 4-0 to Club Bruges, that's more than just we don't have enough talent. There's like something fundamentally wrong there beyond the players on the field to be losing like that.
But even these comments from Henry, does it not go back to what I said to you with Steven Gerrard last week? Like, this is coaching, man. This is what where you go in and you influence it on the field. And he talked about the desire was not there. I mean, it's your first five games. You've got to set the tone. This is your job. It's all right turning up to the press conference in your tracksuit, looking all sports casual. But this is where you earn your corn. I do think that there's a little bit of like wide-eyed wonderment when these coaches go in at the top. Now, certainly not from the like of Frank Lampard, who's taken to it like a duck to water so far. But with Gerrard and Henri, these comments like, guys, get stuck in. It's too late to be talking about too early to be talking about a player's desire and refusal to play. No. This is you. Work your oracle. Work your magic. Have them ready to go.
Yeah.
It's literally your job.
It literally is their job. We continue. Atletico Madrid getting some much needed revenge over Borussia Dortmund. Remember, we spoke at length about the reverse fixture of that when Dortmund hammered Atletico 4-0.
And a first defeat for Dortmund.
Yeah, I know. 2-0. It turns around when they go back to Madrid for this one, getting a 33rd minute goal from Saul and then an 80th minute goal from Antoine Griezmann.
Really nice goal.
Who said, by the way, during the week that he would rather watch a basketball game than a soccer match. I think he's a big Boston Celtics fan. Loves basketball.
He loves Derrick Rose. We know that much.
Okay, I was not aware.
He said that after winning the World Cup. He literally went on camera.
How did that come up?
I don't know. He's really...
This wasn't for the people of France. This was for Derrick Rose.
he really likes Derrick Rose. He's by the way, he would have loved last week with Rose dropping 50.
I know, that was actually... That was
He seemed to say he wanted to come to MLS. He didn't mention one single team. He didn't mention anything about MLS. He wanted to come to MLS so he can watch more basketball live, was what we got from it. But
it's as good a reason as any.
Yeah, but by the way, Griezmann's goal was eerily similar to Sancho's goal for Dortmund, the third goal in the last game where we talked to Stefan Butzko about on last week's podcast. Dortmund were cut open in a very similar fashion. I never really felt that, and I know it's been a weird start to the season for Atletico Madrid, but I never really felt that Lightning would strike twice with them. There's no way at home they could possibly put in a similar performance.
Well, they reverted back to what they do best, and they defended the hell out of this game because, JJ, they had 32% possession in this game. So basically Borussia Dortmund was on the ball for almost the entire match.
Right.
When I look at that. Borussia Dortmund did not have a single shot on target, and only four shots total. I mean, that is suffocating. When you control
Atletico
that much of the ball, and you can't, like, you literally can't do anything with it. That's classic Atletico.
Atletico had 15 shots and seven shots on target,
and just 32%.
Now there was, I can't remember who missed the header, but there was a terrible header from a Borussia Dortmund player from a corner kick. It should have been a goal. I don't know how it ended up over the crossbar, but it did. That is vintage. That is reverting to type from Atletico Madrid.
Let's see. We continue. FC Porto 4-1 over Lokomotiv Moscow. FC Porto is kind of quietly mounting a pretty nice Champions League campaign here. They have yet to lose through four matches. Three wins and one draw. They're top of the group, 10 points. And once again, JJ, just like I talked about a couple weeks ago, both of the Mexican internationals for FC Porto scoring goals in this game. Hector Herrera got it started in the second minute. And then later on when it was 2-1, And then Tecatito, Jesus Corona, scored in the 67th to give them a little bit of breathing space. They added one more to make it 4-1.
And it looked like a dreadfully wet night there for the game. Yeah, look, CONCACAF is having quite a time.
Getting it. We are getting it. Let's see. We talked a little bit about... we'll go to Inter and Barcelona, where it was Malcolm, who has been kind of much maligned for Barcelona.
Absolutely.
Who got the first goal, but then just moments later, 4 minutes later, how good has this man been so far?
Busquets stretched, but not enough. Icardi shot. Now, can he get it away? I thought he shot. That's the goal puncher. Extraordinary. Give him a chance. He'll score. Inter 1, Barcelona 1. Barca had chances to get it away. He could have gone down. His shirt was tugged. He didn't want to. He wanted to find the back of the net. And he's done it now for the ninth time in his last nine games.
Mauro Icardi. He's been on fire.
He has. Have you seen the video that emerged last week of his wife watching a game? She's also his agent, I believe.
No, I did not.
She watches Inter play. The woman is possessed watching the game. Like, she is just absolutely into it, as you would expect she would, because, I mean, she's got kind of two...
She's very invested.
Yeah, she's very invested in it, but it's crazy. It's like, it must be painful to watch games like that if you're going to be so intense about it. But I guess, I mean, like I said, she is pretty invested. But that was actually what was turning out to be, or what we thought would be, a really good Barcelona performance and a nice 3 points away from home, and Icardi rescues it again, so... The main controversy of this game was the color of the Barcelona kit.
Oh, you weren't a fan, huh?
No, I don't know. It's flesh colored. I don't know how you describe it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be running to a sporting goods store to buy them.
Definitely not.
No Leo Messi. There was talk that he might have been able to go with the broken arm, but in the end, that turned out to be false. I'm sure you think Mauro Icardi takes a little bit more motivation just from knowing that, like, that's Messi's team. Right, wasn't Icardi the one who was kind of boxed out over the summer from participating with Argentina because there was some talk that he's just not a Messi guy?
Yeah, that he didn't jive with the Messi. Well, nobody did, really, let's be honest. That they're still trying to find out that formula for that team from that World Cup.
Look, guys take motivation from all kinds of things. If I were Icardi, I'd be thinking about that.
I guess so.
Oh, I'm not good enough to play for Argentina, huh?
Put on a show for Messi, knowing he's watching and can't influence the game. Possibly.
Yeah. It's more fun to play Barcelona, I'm sure, when Messi's just watching and not being able to.
Although, like I said, I thought they had a pretty solid performance up until, I think, that personally, when I saw that Barcelona had scored late on, I was convinced that they were going to take the 3 points.
Yeah. Also in that group, I guess we'll go right to it now, Tottenham and PSV. Spurs come from behind. They go down 1-0, 61 seconds into the match. Set pieces have absolutely, I mean, if they do, in fact, go on to not advance, despite however dramatic and fun today's game turned out to be for them, you will have to look back at set pieces and just say, wow, did they allow that to completely undermine this tournament for them? 61 seconds in, it's a free header off a corner kick for Luc de Jong, who puts PSV Eindhoven up 1-0, and you're starting to think, oh, here we go, same old story. But Harry Kane scores a brilliant goal in the 77th, took it first time with the left foot, kind of bounced it past the keeper. And then this JJ late on for Spurs.
Here's Davis. Decent looking ball and the header down. Takes a deflection and is in. Harry Kane was there for Tottenham. And the ball bubbles over the line in the last couple of minutes of the game.
Ah, the rare double deflection. It goes down as an own goal for Trent Sainsbury of PSV. But Kane...
You couldn't care less.
No, of course. Why would anyone care? He's around all good things that happen for them. It's unbelievable. A couple of things stood out to me in this game. Obviously, him. I saw a stat here from Spurs Statman on Twitter. Said Harry Kane has the best goals per game ratio of any player in Champions League history to play in at least 10 matches in the competition. 13 goals in 14 matches, Harry Kane for Spurs. It's funny because you go on Twitter. I'm sure, you know, you follow as a Liverpool fan, you probably have like a ton of kind of Liverpool specific, some
fan sites,
fans, yeah. You know, just like tons of different people from that world. I'm the same with Tottenham. There's just a lot of different, And boy, Ben Davies was just getting killed, crushed throughout this game. He's not good enough. He should be. Somebody was posting he should be in League Two. That's his quality. And then I couldn't help, because I actually do like him, and I couldn't help but feel good for him that he provided the assist on that winning goal. Perfect ball that he played in. Tottenham took 30 shots in this game. Like, it would have been a little bit of cruelness had they not been able to win that game, because they really, other than the one defensive lapse, which obviously PSV burns them for the goal,
yeah,
they really were very good.
I was following a few, because I didn't watch that one, I was following a few journalists who were tweeting about the game, and they had said, I know Spurs have just conceded, but believe me when I say they've played actually very well. But I felt that was pretty much what happened away from home, and you had these just terrible lapses. Now, much worse happened in Eindhoven than happened in Wembley tonight. But still, Spurs do have that kind of self-destruct button that allows games that should be under their spell, under their control, to slip away.
Absolutely. Always have. Like, it's incredible. Players change, managers change, like, years go by. But that always exists.
Are you going to start talking about curses now and stuff?
I don't understand why. The other thing, look, a couple guys who I've really kind of fallen in love with over the course of the season. You know, we talked about Gazzaniga. He has now supplanted Michel Vorm as the backup. So while Lloris is out with this serving the red card suspension, Gazzaniga got the start today.
He looks much better than
Vorm.
And
he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Had a huge save. Everything I'm saying about Tottenham dominating the game, there was a moment, I don't remember who the player was for PSV, but he came in one-on-one with the keeper, and it was kind of, okay, this could be it to put it away. And Gazzaniga came up huge with the save to keep Spurs in it, and then they, of course, go on and win the game. So props to him. And another guy, Eric Lamela came on as a sub, which, by the way, for all the love that I give Pochettino, I did not understand him taking off Lucas Moura for Eric Lamela. Lucas Moura was fantastic. He was, for large stretches of the game, he was the best player on the field, I thought. Maybe it was a fatigue issue, because it was pretty early on. So that's the only thing I could think of, because he was fantastic. But Lamela, as much as I love him, and as much as I love the irritant that he is so willing to be, like, he's more than happy to play the role of heel. Yeah, I'll be the guy that you all hate. I'm totally cool with that. I'm going to do that. He did a thing today that it was caught on TV. It was caught on camera. But no referee saw it. I think Tottenham were up 2-1.
Oh,
I think
God.
This was late. Maybe it was 1-1, but they're pushing forward. All I know is it happened late in the game after at least one of their goals had been scored. And there was kind of a scrum in the corner. Ball goes out. And as Lamela's coming back, just like running back to after whatever throw-in is about to happen, he puts an elbow right into player for PSV Eindhoven. I didn't see who it was.
But doesn't catch him in the face.
Doesn't get him in the face, but elbows him like right in the chest. And the guy on PSV kind of gives him a look like, what is that?
Yeah. If he goes
if he goes down, he didn't. But if he goes down there, there's a good chance that Lamela is sent off. Now, I don't know. It wasn't to the face, but it's still an elbow for absolutely no reason.
Nah, if you elbow him in the chest,
you can get sent off for that, right?
And it's not in the course of a play.
No, it had nothing to do.
You're gone.
No, it was during a stoppage, essentially.
Yeah, he got lucky there.
And it's funny, too, because I talk about the Spurs people that I follow on Twitter, and there was a kind of a gif made of that, and they're all just like, tell me you wouldn't die for this man. Like, how much do you love? And I was like, okay, it's cool, I guess, when it works out. But if one guy sees that and now he's done and sent off, and like that submarines Spurs chances, are we having that same conversation?
No, you're certainly not.
Be the irritant, be that guy. But like, within reason.
We have a listener who tweets us regularly, and of course I don't have their name in front of me, but whenever Lamela comes up in conversation on Twitter, he often tweets us and says, Lamela's the kind of guy who would drive a certain kind of car, I can't remember what it is, and kiss his own biceps. Just the kind of local, small town, tough guy. That kind of guy. He gives that aura. Now, I've never quite got that, but that elbow to the chest,
I'm telling you, man,
seems like that kind of action.
I feel like he does one thing per game where if I was a fan of the other team, I would say, God, I hate that guy.
The action of a teenage ruffian.
Like a guy, like somebody who refers to it as Strong Island rather than Long Island, like something like that?
Yeah, kind of a what we would call in the Northeast a Benny. Someone who goes down to the shore, you know, has some carefully placed tattoos, a lot of oil in the hair, and, you know, calls his muscles the gun show.
Nice. Big fan of guys like that. Let's see. Schalke 2, Galatasaray 0. Weston McKennie didn't score, so I don't have anything to say about that game.
but he did feature, so that's enough. Yes.
And then Napoli PSG, which we kind of mentioned, 1-1 that ends thanks to one of your favorite players. Lorenzo Insigne converts a penalty.
I rave about him. I think he's fantastic. Callahan went flying into the box and was upended by Buffon. And instead of Buffon has clearly learned his lesson about giving away penalties and protesting with referees. And actually, Buffon was enjoying himself up until that point. It was 1-0, and he was pulling off a couple of good saves, a couple of standard saves, but he looked so happy to be back in Italy. And yeah, he gives away the penalty, and Insigne buries it to the keeper's right. And that was a really good game. That, I'll tell you, when you look at a game like that and you think, and I know we'll talk about the Super League on the next podcast on Thursday, but the idea of Napoli not being involved in this thing, you know, the fact that games like and fixtures like this wouldn't happen, the idea that there's some definitive meritocracy that doesn't involve money in the game, that game just blew it away.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm wholeheartedly with you. So we got another slate of games on Wednesday. Like I said, we'll recap that for you on a Thursday podcast is what we are planning for right now. I'll tell you what, we're going to step aside, take a very quick break, come back, do a little bit of MLS, and then we got a mailbag for you, too. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now. Caught offside. The MLS postseason, JJ. It is upon us. We've been waiting all year for it, and it is well underway. In fact, teams have actually, since the last time we did this, have already been eliminated from the playoff picture. But we'll get right into the conference semifinals, which is where we are right now through the first legs. Starting the Western Conference, Portland taking a 2-1 lead going into the second leg against Seattle. Multiple tough breaks, I thought, for the Sounders.
Yes. Mostly, though, what's going to happen going forward. They grab that away goal. 2-1's not a terrible result to take out of Portland. But Christian Roldan out, we think. At this point, he's not going to play. The reports this morning were it's not happening. He's more than likely to miss the next game.
Now, I think the play that he was injured on was the one where he was trying to draw the penalty. Do you, I don't know if you saw it, but did you think that that was a penalty? Because personally, it was, even after VAR looked at it, it was not awarded, and I thought that was totally the correct call.
I didn't think it was.
You didn't think it was the correct call, or
no,
you didn't think it was a penalty?
I didn't think it was a penalty.
Yeah, me neither. It seemed like Roldan, and look, I get what he's trying to do. That ball is kind of running away from him towards the end line. He's probably, even if he gets to it, whatever scoring opportunity he had hoped was kind of has gone by the wayside at that point. So he's going to make this last ditch effort. He kind of like sneakily alters his path. He kind of like runs away from the ball and into a diving keeper, thinking that, you know, yeah, if the official sees that it may be the right angle for me, I'm going to get this.
It was Vardy-esque.
Okay.
Kind of
drags the foot,
trying to draw the contact when the ball's gone a little bit too far, and that's not a penalty for me.
Yeah, I thought that they got that one absolutely right. Now, his injury is important. Equally as important is the injury to Chad Marshall, one of the best defenders in MLS. He left after a non-contact knee injury, which is always worrisome.
They're talking about meniscus in the reports I've seen. Can be cleaned, can be looked after, but will probably rule him out of the next leg.
Yeah,
from what we've heard.
I don't want to play doctor, but
no, I don't either. But I'm just going by what I read in the Seattle newspapers.
The goal for Jeremy Ebobise, did you think he was offside? Because that was another one where I went on MLSsoccer.com and there's like actual math, like geometry, showing was here.
I'm just happy there's an American player scoring in MLS.
Yeah.
So I just went with it.
I'll tell you what, like, I don't know, people, I don't know if Seattle fans want to get up in arms over it. They thought maybe it should have been. If we have to get to the point where we are conducting geometry lessons on screen, like, can't you just throw your arms up and say, well, sometimes it happens.
Oh, so we're going with JJ's theory of things can happen in games. Soccer is a reflection of life. It has imperfections.
This is one, though. Look, when obvious... No. Are you trying to make this about VAR?
No.
Don't you dare.
No,
yes, you are.
No, I never said that. I never mentioned VAR.
Yes, you are. Don't you dare. I'm saying when it's so close as that VAR can't even tell you, then, like, nobody's allowed to be upset about
it. No, you don't get upset. Of course you don't.
Right. And I'm not saying that Seattle fans have come out of the woodwork and are losing their minds, but I'm just saying if they're out there and they're saying it's not right, I'm saying that's one where I won't accept that on that one.
What about Giovanni Savarese? How do we view his job right now so far, the job that he's done this season? I think he's done a brilliant job.
Oh, I mean, think back to the way it started.
Yeah.
His job was in jeopardy after, what was it, the first like 5-6 games of the season. They couldn't get a point. Yeah, look at them now. They're taking a 2-1 lead back to the second leg in Seattle. If you had told him back at that stage in the season that this is where they'll be now, I think he would have said, wow, I really turned things around.
I think in our MLS preview I did a matchup between him and Jason Kreis and said that these were like absolutely vital seasons for both of them. And look how it turned out.
Yeah, that should be a fascinating second leg. I think those Seattle fans are going to show up in force. Obviously, that is what they do. The other Western Conference matchup, Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City settle for a 1-1 draw heading back to the second leg. Diego Rubin scoring for Sporting KC.
But what a goal for RSL. The Rusnak volley.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful play to hit it off Krelek's, well, not hit it off his head, to play the 1-2 off his head and then to just catch it perfectly in stride. And then
I know it was Benjamin Pavard-esque.
It was really, really good. Now it wasn't quite Pavard.
Oh, but come on, can you let me have anything?
Okay, it was. But the interesting thing for me now is Rusnak will, because of yellow card accumulation, will miss the next game. And I'm not saying he was downbeat, because I don't think he does downbeat. He does kind of jittery positivity. But Petke, I don't know. He seemed a little bit. You know, it's a tough place to go. They're the best team or one of the best teams in the conference for a reason. I don't know. He was.
What's wrong with all that? That's classic coach speak.
Yeah, I know. I looked into his eyes and just.
He's not going to throw a chair in every press conference.
He disappointed me. I wanted some kind of classic Petke. I need a big incident in the next game to go against him. I'm sorry, RSL fans. I need it. I haven't had real photocopier, Petke handing out photocopies of everything that's gone against him, like doing his full meltdown mode. I need to see it.
Love that guy. Eastern Conference, we switch over there. Atlanta, they score one in the first half, but nothing more. Not a ton of chances for NYCFC.
Well, not a shot on target.
Yeah, but that's not to say that they were void of all chances altogether. Yangel Herrera had a goal disallowed after David Villa was whistled for a dangerous play on a bicycle attempt. Again, this was like razor's edge stuff to me as to whether or not it's the right call. I think I'm okay with it. Joseph Martinez kind of goes flying in to challenge Villa. Villa's boot is up kind of near Martinez's head, enough so that Martinez has to turn his head. So it does kind of alter the defense on that play.
The way I see the bicycle kick now is you can't have any opposition player close to you if you're going to execute it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was okay with that. It's a tough break. Like you say, in a game where NYCFC's chances are few and far between, when one does fall to them there, it's called back on, I don't want to say a fluky foul, but like boot up around the head on a bicycle attempt, then ball deflected to player who scores. I don't know, kind of a tough break. However, Atlanta United FC also had a goal disallowed, Miguel Almiron for offside.
But they did bundle one over the line, which was crucial.
Yeah, I know. So not an Atlanta United type of goal. Like, I feel like they're, you know, they play such open style and free flowing and it's fun to watch. And this was just kind of like.
But that game really wasn't. And I think that's the problem with these two leg ties at this point. The first leg is quite physical, quite tetchy. Nobody wants to give anything away. And free flowing football. Like, NYCFC are capable of free-flowing football, even on that surface at Yankee Stadium. And we know what Atlanta United can do. And yet, if you watch the first half of that game, Laurentovic must have spent most of the time either rubbing his jaw, rubbing his knee. He was getting...
Well, by the way, let's not make it sound like he's diving all over the place. He, like...
No, David Villa caught him.
Was nearly put through his back.
Yeah, David Villa caught him a couple of times, but there was lots of other niggly fouls in this game.
I'm sorry, I'm confusing him. It was Greg Garza. David Villa nearly put his foot through Greg Garza's back.
Oh, yeah.
Probably could have been red carded. No, the Larenowitz one that I was thinking was Ronald Matarrita away from the ball, just shoulder, like...
That's right.
Eric Lamella, like, shoulder into Larenowitz for basically no reason.
Now, the narrative
that... NYCFC were playing with fire in some of these moments.
But that's the thing. The narrative that's emerged from this game was that it was some kind of negative masterclass from Tata Martino, in which he kind of shut this team down to get a gritty away result, when I thought a lot of the physicality, particularly in the first half, came on the side of NYCFC.
Alex Ring, too. He might have been lucky to have avoided a red card. He came in real hard on a challenge.
Okay, it was not... Again, and I'm not actually blaming anyone. This isn't one of JJ's patented MLS sucks rants. It's none of that.
God, I would... How dare you?
You'd throw me through the window.
I won't have it.
No, this is not that. This is just a kind of a byproduct of having the two-legged semifinals. I don't think it works.
Well, we had an email recently to the podcast asking us for suggestions on changing the playoff format. You sat there silent.
Yeah, I never thought of this. I don't know.
So what do you want? Just one-offs?
Kind of. I kind of do. Toss for home field advantage or
toss? No, how about the higher seed?
All right, higher seed, whatever you Americans want to do. But do you not think it...
I have no problem with it whatsoever. None.
You don't think we saw a couple of... You know, some bad games this weekend, particularly involving the New York sides, that might be alleviated if you know it's all on the line in the one game and you've got to go out and play.
You might get even tetchier, turgidier affairs if it's all on the line, with one side just playing for penalties.
Okay.
No,
I was just thinking.
Well, you know what? Think some more, okay? Come back when you're ready to really give an idea.
Don't take that tone with me, all right?
And then
Seriously. Finally,
the Red Bulls, JJ, regular season be damned.
Slap you around the head.
They better figure it out, the Red Bulls.
They're doing it again.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, look, there's still a second leg to be played, so nobody's writing anyone off here. And it's a team that I've grown to really enjoy over the course of the season. So,
calm down.
No, I'm serious.
You're supposed to be a Philadelphia Union fan.
I mean, enjoy watching. Like, I don't root for them, okay. But I enjoy the fact that they... What do we always say on this show? That it doesn't matter who the personnel is, how things change, they always win. There's something to be respected in that.
Yeah, they didn't create it. Well, they don't always win. They didn't create a ton of chances. It's getting kind of funny now at this point. They didn't create a ton of chances, but yet they had the Parker header in the first half, which I expected the net to Russell, and it hits the post and then hits Stefan in the head and comes out. And then Zach Stefan, which is why we rate him so highly at times, pulls off right at the death. Because that away goal does make such a huge difference.
Yep.
The complexion has changed if the Red Bulls come out with that away goal out of MAPFRE Stadium. BWP, who hasn't got a sniff all game, flicks the header on. And Andrew, I thought it was in, and Stefan dives low to his left-hand side, makes a really great save.
Yeah, also had a huge sweeper-keeper moment.
He did.
Like, what was it?
That's true.
40 yards out,
That's
35
true.
Yards out.
By the way, how good was Federico Higuain when he came into the game?
Yeah, I kind of didn't understand why he wasn't starting.
Berhalter, excuse me. I didn't even say his name right.
What do you mean?
Just knew I'm going to keep him in reserve for a little bit.
Who's to say you wouldn't have gotten that all game long?
But don't forget that they had that marathon game against DC United.
Right.
Conserve. And once when a manager gets that wrong, they get crushed. He got that 100% right.
All right.
What a flick Tizard is.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
That was a very nice goal. Let's see. So we've got MLS games coming up, of course, over the weekend. We'll give you a little bit of a preview of those on Thursday's podcast. We've got the U.S. squad released for the upcoming friendlies. We'll get to that in our mailbag in just a moment. But first, ZipRecruiter, JJ. You know what's not smart? job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's right. Because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. No, ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So easy. So you get qualified candidates super fast. No more sorting through the wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from the hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. You ready?
Yeah.
ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside. OFFSIDE. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
If you are hiring my replacement, is there something in an interview scenario that I could wear? Or is there some mistake I could make sartorially, or maybe even with tattoos that you're like,
no.
Is there something that
have you got
one of those things? I just couldn't work with that.
It's kind of hard to put my finger on something like that. I guess I would know it when I'd see it. No, tattoos wouldn't bother me. Not for a job like this. Certainly not. I don't know. You ever see Step Brothers?
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend telling the person conducting the interview to shut their mouth.
That wouldn't work either.
That's not helpful.
No.
Farting during an interview, not usually helpful.
Definitely don't
Everything
do that.
That they did in their job interviews, I'd suggest against. Tuxedos to job interviews, typically, I would kind of frown upon that too.
What about Thierry Henry's sports casual move?
I mean,
wearing the sneakers with the suit?
If you're Thierry Henry, well, that's the style now. Everybody does that. I can't get away with that. I'm not even going to try.
I think you could.
You're crazy. You're trying to set me up for embarrassment.
No, I think you could.
Yeah. I think that's nice of you to say, but I'm not going to do it. JJ, we got a couple of friendlies coming up for the U.S., pretty high-profile friendlies. November 15th against England at Wembley, and then November 20th against Italy in Belgium, in Genk, that second one. The one on the 15th against England looking like it's going to be the Wayne Rooney send-off into the sunset.
Yeah, there's such debate going on right now in England over that this game. Alan Shearer wrote, England, it's an honour to play for England. England shouldn't honour you. And then there was talk that all the money was going to Wayne Rooney's foundation, his charity. Now that's the ticket sales. That's not happening. A lot of people are conflicted. This is still an international. It's still a cap. Why are they bringing back a retired player from MLS to play for England?
I'll be honest. I don't get this at all. It's not that I have a problem with it necessarily. I just don't understand. Like, he was not a beloved member of the England team. Now, let's say he had been playing for England and like the World Cup was coming around and then he suffered some bad injury and it kind of forced him into retirement to miss a World Cup. Like, I could understand this sort of sentimental feeling among fans to say, let's give him the send-off that he deserves, not the one that he suffered through that injury. But that wasn't really the case. He just kind of was no longer viewed as like a player that they wanted to have. I don't know. If he was just like this loved player by all English fans, then I'd say, okay, maybe, but I never got that feeling at all.
No, I never got that feeling either. And I would think maybe only one tournament could he look back in, and that was his first in Euro 2004, with any kind of real happiness. They were all fraught. We remember in South Africa in 2010, him shouting down the camera, the TV camera, terrible, isn't it great to be booed by your own fans? And I never felt playing for England was a joy for him, even though he was there, turned out to score more goals than anybody else in an England shirt. I don't think he ever really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of strange. And look, my feelings about him have kind of changed a little just because I really respected the way he came to MLS and like went full bore and turned out to be a great addition to DC United. I actually felt bad that he missed his penalty in their playoff game last week. But I don't know. This just felt weird to me. As for the U.S., 16 of the 28-man squad play abroad, which you had to expect. I'm reading from Jeff Carlisle's article. Of the 12 MLS-based players, 7 belong to teams that are still competing in the MLS Cup playoffs. This could explain the reason for the slightly greater squad numbers compared to previous camps, as those 7 will arrive at camp later than others, given that the second leg of the conference finals will take place this coming weekend. Always found it weird MLS players leaving their playoff teams in the middle of the playoffs. We have an international break. It's just, I don't know, it's just kind of awkward scheduling. I sort of wish that MLS-based players wouldn't have to go be released for this, like, this set of kind of meaningless international friendlies. Allow the momentum of MLS's postseason to continue.
I mean, MLS doesn't stop their season for anything, really, or rarely stops its season for anything. They plow through international calendar breaks and everything, and now this is the one where they feel as if they kind of have to.
Yeah, I don't really like that all that much, but whatever.
Anybody in that squad?
Well, it's good to see Christian Pulisic back with the squad because, you know, he's going to be the face of this team if he's not already. And he hasn't been able to play with them quite as much as you kind of would like to see. So, you know, I'm kind of getting to a point now where I want him playing for them at every opportunity, where he can develop chemistry with McKennie and Adams. So, I'm all for that.
The Michael Bradley haters have got their wish. There will be no Bradley.
Right, but... I don't know if that has anything to do with performance. Dave Sarakin said it simply has to do with the fact that he hasn't really had a break for the better part of 2 years. So I'll take him at his word on that. Up front, I like seeing Josh Sargent back in the squad. Only two forwards included, him and Bobby Wood. But more opportunities for Josh Sargent to continue to make his name on an international level. All about that.
That's about all I really have. I have only one thing, really. I'm just wondering, like, what would Alfredo Morales have to do to edge his way back in? He has 13 caps for the United States. He starts regularly for Fortuna Dusseldorf in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout.
I don't know why. I know it's not Dave Sarakin's job to look at everybody, but it wouldn't be harmful to look at someone who's playing at that level. You know?
Yeah. I guess one other name that I would mention too, Luca De La Torre of Fulham.
That's a good inclusion.
Yeah. Was very successful for the U.S. on a youth level. And now getting some run potentially with the senior team.
Well, limited minutes still at Fulham, and he probably needs a move. But
he's very young still. But yeah, so I kind of am hoping to see him a little bit. Let's see. You have a mailbag.
At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, cutoffsidepod@gmail.com. Hassan kicks us off. You see what you've done to me? ? I've gone out to buy Arrested Development DVDs. Thank you. I've never watched it before, but what I saw left me in hysterics. And to be fair, that is the general feedback we've got. It was a raging success.
Good, because it was very self-indulgent.
We've done it before, and
You're taking a risk. I mean, I don't know. We got a lot of listeners to this podcast. What percentage of them do you say love Arrested Development?
Well,
even if it's 50%, which is a huge number, that's still half the audience that doesn't know what we're talking about.
Well, those who were alienated by the whole podcast did not get in touch. That's all I'd say about that. Rhea, she tweets us, if it's true and Mourinho has admitted he's unable to solve United's defensive frailties, why don't they concentrate on outscoring the opposition? Why not start each match trying to score if you know the back line is crap? Scoring early forces the other team to attack. That's because that's never been Mourinho's way. His mantra is, first of all, don't get beaten. That's pretty much it. And that mindset does not lend itself to free-flowing attacking football. And look, United have played better when they've been behind in quite a few games, notably the Newcastle at home game. Mourinho is not changing his spots. And I would advise a lot of people who are interested in Mourinho and aren't tired by the whole saga at Manchester United. Sam Borden did an interesting profile for ESPN the magazine, and it's online and it's pretty good. Bassam, hey guys, quick culture question. I listen to other EPL footy podcasts, and on more than a few occasions, I hear hosts and guests refer to the game half and half scarves as something they'd never buy. However, I see it embraced by many fans at stadiums whenever I'm watching on TV. What's the story with those things? I feel if I was ever to go to a live EPL match, it would be a great souvenir. Would I be considered a corny bloke if I did? Thanks, day one listener, Bassam.
We have talked about this before. I am very against it. But what I would say on his behalf, I'm very against it if it's a scarf or a piece of memorabilia that involves my team that I support. If you are purely neutral and you're going to a game and just kind of want to mark the occasion as like a memento, then yeah, I'm cool with that. But like if you, you know, if you were a Barcelona fan at tonight's Barcelona Inter match and you bought a scarf with both teams on there, I'd say, why? When are you ever going to wear that?
Dreadful. Yeah. Absolutely dreadful. And I remember the first iteration of these scarves came out, and it used to, I actually have one of them. I don't know where I got it. I think it was a friendly game, but it was a Liverpool Celtic. One half Liverpool, one half Celtic, and their hands clasped together motif in the middle of the scarf. Now, that was fine for a friendly.
Yeah, are you anti-peace or what?
No, but Celtic would go on to knock Liverpool out in the UEFA Cup some years later. The idea of sport is rivalries. You shouldn't try and manufacture these kind of corny things.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Evan Wittort, Andrew and JJ, hopefully you guys haven't been swamped with requests like this, but I'd like to throw my hat in the ring. I'm from Chicago, but going to NY with my brother in November. I'd love to buy a pint for you fine gentlemen if you're available on a Friday or Saturday night in November as a small thank you for keeping me entertained and informed over the last 18 months. I feel obligated to ask a soccer question if I'm going to write in. So as a side note, what happened to the fire this year? Has Schweinsteiger just fallen off this year, or what happened to us? Honestly, I couldn't deal with the Chicago Fire question because they're just so irrelevant right now.
Wow.
So instead, I did this.
This is just
Chicago Fire, the TV show music.
Nice of you to take his question seriously. Real big of you. Yeah, I don't know what happened to them. 10th in the East. They were pretty awful. I don't know if trading away David Akam had anything to do with it, but then he went to Philadelphia and kind of underperformed.
Schweinsteiger's not been good.
No.
The midfield has not had the zip we thought it would have. I mean, on paper, at the start of the season, we kind of liked a lot of what we saw, but I don't know what to tell you.
No.
Also, JJ, you're reading the ending of my last email as Love, Evan, something I've gotten endless crap from my friends about since. All my best, Evan.
I don't know. I prefer Love.
Love, Evan.
Yeah.
By the way, how can we swing pints with listeners into some kind of a bit, into some kind of a segment?
How about in some kind of reality? We got to do this one of these times.
Yeah, we definitely got to do it. Evan might be the first. We'll let him know. We have his email address. Kane Edwards, is this Atlanta United team better than Fulham?
Oh, man. It's fun. How do you view questions like this?
I don't know.
We were having a conversation at work the other day about whether or not Alabama football could beat the Giants. Now, I believe that it's the dumbest conversation and the dumbest argument that you could possibly have. It doesn't totally apply to this situation because Atlanta are a professional team. So I give them way more of a chance.
I'd fancy Joseph Martinez and Almiron against Odoi and Ream right now. Or whoever they want to play at fullback, Tim Fosu-Mensah and the rest. I'd fancy them. The rest of the team, I don't think I would. I think Mitrovic could do some damage to the Atlanta United defence. Sessegnon, don't tell me he's not going to rip open that Atlanta United defence. And don't tell me that Trulla. It's going to be 5-5.
I certainly do believe that the best, if we're going to say Atlanta's the best team in MLS, I don't know that they are. I think you kind of have to say the Red Bulls, but it's kind of a toss-up. I would like to think that the best team in MLS can give a game to one of the worst teams in the Premier League, right?
Oh, RIP to your mentions. Oh, my God.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
That was such an inflammatory statement that they could give them a game?
Give them a game?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What did you think I said? Could beat them? I didn't say that. You weren't listening.
I think Fulham would still beat Atlanta United.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think Atlanta could, you know, it couldn't be 3-1, 3-2. I don't know. Look at Fulham's defense right now. You don't think Joseph Martinez?
I just said, I listed them out. Yeah. I fancy Joseph Martinez to do damage to Odoi and those guys.
Yeah.
I would like to see it in some kind of competitive fashion, but we never will. So there
Fulham
you go.
Is America's team. I think we could, if there's any team that we could make this happen with, it would be them.
Frank Barker. Frank's making demands.
Oh, no.
Hope this gets discussed in serious detail on a pod. What do you think serious detail means?
Well, what's the question?
Spiegel Online. A coalition that includes FC Bayern Munich spent months working on plans to create a private league of elite teams behind the backs of associations and other teams. and this is from Football Leaks, and the ongoing articles that Spiegel Online are delivering to us about City Football Group, PSG, and some of the backhanded dealings that are going on behind the scenes, or that they allege are going on behind the scenes, including issues with financial fair play. But we're going to talk about them on Thursday because I've deemed it something we need to discuss.
Yeah. By the way, if you're Bayern doing that, like, I get it when you've won all these consecutive league titles that they've won, but it does look a little bit bad when you're doing that. Like, because basically I read that as the competition in our league is so weak, it's not worth our time. Well, you're third right now. So maybe, like, win a Champions League. Now, I know they beat Borussia Dortmund, but that's kind of in the rearview mirror at this point. Like, get to a final of a Champions League. Not, you know, be dominating your league currently. I don't know. They're definitely one of the best teams in the world. There's no question about it. But, like,
I hate everything about what's been revealed, allegedly. What has been revealed from Spiegel Online, but they're all allegations.
Yeah.
But I hate all of it, and we will talk a bit more about it on Thursday. At your boy, JC1. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Big Arsenal fan from Wisconsin.
Nice.
Been listening to you guys for about 2 years. You guys do a great job at getting informative guests on the pod. Well, when they turn up.
Oh, come on. Let's move on. You harbor bitterness.
You've never met anything like me. Explain yeah. What happens when I get bitter about people.
Well, how much detail do you want me to go into? You broke something earlier today in rage.
Yeah, I did.
Right. It's kind of, I almost feel uncomfortable being around you.
Was also wondering if you guys could talk about your soccer history in a pod coming up soon. So, soccer history, I've played it, and I've coached it in America. Coached high school teams in America.
Where do I begin?
You're a fan too. I've seen you play.
Where do I even begin?
I've seen you play.
Complex question.
You have
so much history.
You have
rich history.
You have an educated right foot.
One of the best you've ever seen.
By the way, if I haven't said
so much history,
I haven't said this lately. Andrew's wife Amanda played in high school, and about 3 years ago, we went to the park, and a bunch of us, some of your friends, and mm-hmm. we all had a big game, like 5v5, and Amanda was the best player on the park.
No, you were. Don't be like that.
Amanda was very good.
I actually did coach. It was under unfortunate circumstances, but I got a DUI, and a court order had me coach an up-and-coming team, the Mallards, a youth team, young kids.
Wow.
Up in Minnesota. Yeah. And we went on, beat the Falcons.
No way.
Yeah. There was a dirty incident involving one of our players. Adam Banks was knocked down, and he used to play for the other team. It was all very messy. They made a movie out of it. I don't know if you are aware, but yeah.
And what was the name of the team? The Mighty Mallards?
The Mighty Mallards, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're not plagiarizing?
No, that was all me. What else you got? Is that it?
That's it. That's the mailbag.
Well, there you go. That is the mailbag. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter and caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. I hope everybody voted today, if that's your thing. I always feel bad because you're one of the most politically educated people that I know.
Thank you.
Like, we talk all the time about stuff going on, and I always feel bad today because you would probably love more than a lot of people that I know to be able to cast a ballot, and you can't. So I always kind of think of you, this is when I've cast my vote, I always think this is for JJ.
Well, soon, thank you. Well, soon I will be able to cast my vote.
What?
So.
Is this a breaking news announcement?
Well, no. Well, I will be going through the citizenship process soon enough.
This is huge.
You knew this already.
This is absolutely huge. We got to help you. What can I do to help? Do you need a recommendation?
From the guy who got a DUI and then went off to Minnesota to coach youth
the
soccer.
Mallards.
The Mallards, yeah. No,
we'll help you study.
Yeah, help me study. We'll do a bit on...
We'll do a whole big trivia.
Abraham Washington and all those guys.
We got a lot of work to do.
Clearly.
Well, hey, we'll be back later this week to wrap up the Champions League and to look ahead to the weekend. MLS and Premier League matches should be fun.
I've had fun on this podcast. I'm not sure it's sated my rage. And I'm sorry for being angry on the podcast.
Well, I apologize to anyone that you come in contact with on the subway ride home. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.